Catch a wave and you're sitting on top of the world.
This is Catching a Wave with your host, Jammin' James Riley. The sounds of summer, surf, and good time rock and roll.
And if this isn't your idea of fun, then you're a rat thing.
Hey everybody, it's Jammin' James Riley, and you're listening to Catching a Wave, where it's summer all year long. Coming up on the show today from Jan and Dean, we hear part one of our interview with Dean Torrance.
I swear to God, he was getting at least a couple hundred records a day once he hit the whole mailing list of all the record companies he could find addresses for. Every single day after school, would go up to his house and open up those envelopes and put them on the turntable and see if they were any good.
That story and so much more with Dean Torrance coming up in just a little bit. Now let's kick things off with something we'll discuss with Dean later in the program. In fact, we'll hear Take One of this song later as well. From the album The Beach Boys Party Uncovered and Unplugged, it's take number 3 of Barbara Ann on Catching a Wave.
Real cooker.
I want that bass, the Rudy sound hit.
What's
bah, 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 bah. Oh. You don't know how to sing. Bah, 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 bah. Black sheep, have you any wool?
Closer,
no, not just a little bit.
Oh, that was cute. Ba 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 ba
Bob Barberin. Went to a dance looking for a man. Saw Bob Barberin, so I thought I'd take a chance. Bob Barberin, Bob Barberin, Bob Barberin, Bob Barberin, Bob Barberin. You got me rocking and a rolling, rocking and a reading. Bob Barberin, Bob Barberin, Bob Barberin,
Bob Barberin, Bob Barberin,
Bob Barberin, Bob Barberin.
You
just
got me
rocking and a rolling, rocking and a reeling, bobberin, pop, 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 bobberin.
Let's try it once more.
One more time, with more artistic flavor.
You got me rocking and a rolling and a reeling,
bad, really.
Hi, this is Dick Dale, and you're listening to Catching a Wave with my man Jammin' James Riley.
Thank you.
That's guitar legend Dick Dale and Ho Dad Machine from his 1963 album Checkered Flag. Coming up, we've got Link Wray, Deke Dickerson with Low Straitjackets, and this one from the Lively Ones. It's Chicken Scratch on Catching a Wave.
Hi, this is Eddie Angel of Low Straitjackets. Keep it tuned here to Catching a Wave with Jammin' James Riley.
Let's go.
We're back on Catching a Wave, and we just heard Link Ray and his tune The Green Hornet. Los Straitjackets with Deke Dickerson before that, from their album titled Deke Dickerson Sings the Great Instrumental Hits, and the tune Wild Weekend. Well, hey, it's Jam and James Riley on Catching a Wave, and as promised, or maybe threatened, we have Dean Torrance on the phone. How you doing, Dean?
Yeah, threatened sounds like the right word. I'm just doing fine. How are you?
Man, I am doing great. It's so excited to have you on here. I want to talk about your new book, Surf City, the Jane and Dean story on Select Books. First question, when did the idea for this book come to you?
Oh, actually, I started writing it in 1992.
Oh, okay.
I happen to know that because I actually dated the page that I started writing. I would just take a notebook whenever I had to be on an airplane because there's nothing else to do. So I would, instead of wasting my time, I couldn't sleep on an airplane, I had a notebook and I'd just get it out. Start writing.
Yeah.
So it was all handwritten, and I just did it in chronological order, and some 20 years later, I went, well, glad I wrote all that down, because a lot of it, I probably would have forgotten.
Was there some stuff when you were compiling this that maybe you had forgotten?
Yeah, kind of a bunch of things. Again, I was really, really happy I wrote it down while I remembered it. I could, if somebody had jogged my memory, in conversation, I'd go, oh, this happened or that happened or something similar to that, and I would have recalled it. But if I were just sitting down and somebody said, start writing, at least half of it, unless somebody else jogged my memory, I wouldn't have remembered it.
The book is fantastic, and it's a great read. It's heartwarming.
Oh, you actually wrote it.
I did.
You read the damn
I read wow. The whole thing. I love your sense of humor in there. It's heartwarming. It's heartbreaking, but it very encouraging. And your writing style is wonderful, and people that are fans of Jan and Dean certainly appreciate the humor in the songs. Will love this. So, fantastic.
Well, I had a really good time, and I wanted to make sure that was first and foremost in telling the story. I'm not a writer, and I told the publisher that I'm not a writer, but I don't want a ghostwriter, because I want to tell the story. I'm not going to write the story. I'm more or less telling it. And I'm a storyteller, so I want it to feel like that. And the way you're describing it, I must have done an okay job.
Well, it feels like we're just sitting around in your living room and you've told us the entire story, laughing with you and feeling upset. And, it's a great read. And I think that's why it's such a great read, because you're not using a ghostwriter or telling it in a different way, but it is just a storytelling way, which is fantastic.
Yeah, and I knew that Mike Love's book was coming out. He was nice enough to write my foreword, which I really appreciated. And Brian Wilson's book, another book, is, I don't know if it's out or it's almost out. But anyway, three of us were all going to have books out. I kind of knew that Mike was going to spar with Brian, and Brian was going to probably spar with Mike, and there was always going to be that kind of explaining themselves instead of talking about how wonderful a journey this all was. So I made sure that mine was 80% of it. Really a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Unfortunately for Jan, he does have an automobile accident, and unfortunately the story isn't quite as happy from that point on, but it's inspirational.
Sure.
Nonetheless, and he does, it's a redemption and all of that, and he got another 20 plus years out of making music that he wouldn't have had his accident been any worse. So all in all, it wasn't easy for him, but he got to do it anyway. And just weeks before he passed away, he actually had done a show in a really nice performing arts center and gotten 3 standing ovations. So he was still making people happy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right up to the end. Hi, this is Dean Torrance, and you're listening to Catching a Wave with Jammin' James Riley.
Said you run, buddy, mom, just running fine. Let's come off the line now. It's sunset and fine, but I'll Thing I remember, Doc, I started to swerve, and then I saw the Jag slide into the curve. I know I'll never forget that horrible sight. I guess I found out for myself that everyone was right.
Won't come back from Dead Man's Curve.
Dead Man's Curve.
It's Dead Man's Curve by Jan and Dean. Our guest this hour is Dean Torrance. Dead Man's Curve reached number 8 on the Billboard Hot 100 in 1964. Now, Jan Barry suffered severe head injuries in an automobile crash on April 12, 1966, ironically, a short distance from Dead Man's Curve. It was also the name of a movie airing in 1978 on CBS. Shortly after that, Jan and Dean reunited for a string of dates with the Beach Boys and continued to tour despite some of Jan's physical limitations until the time of Jan's death on March 26, 2004. Now let's get back to our interview with Dean Torrance. One of the things that stood out to me was something you said towards the end, that you basically had two choices, one that would benefit Jan and Dean as a band and one that would benefit Jan, and you chose the path that would benefit Jan, which was really telling to me. I mean, it was that was something that kind of stood out and told me a lot about you, which was pretty cool.
I mean, we were absolutely great friends up to his accident. I mean, as a matter of fact, we were roommates. He invited me to live at his brand new, beautiful Bel Air home. We were that close. But you know, after the accident, his kind of brain damage—it's more like a person that has had a stroke. It was that severe, but that causes that kind of brain damage causes all sorts of, you know, depression and paranoia, and it's tough to live with.
Yeah.
You know, and it makes it tough for the people around you to live with. But I had to keep telling myself we were best friends before the accident, so no matter what happens after the accident, I just will go back to the memories of our friendship before the accident, and I'll just kind of live with what I got in front of me now.
You know, it's obviously he went through a horrible time. But I think it also, reading this book, it helps give us what you went through, too. I mean, it was pretty traumatic for you of realizing life as you knew it was going to change drastically.
Totally the opposite, yeah. And I did make the point in the book that when I saw Glenn Campbell's special, that it really, really hit home. Because as I was living it, I was just trying to get through a day at a time. I tried not to dwell on too much because we had to get, you know, our product, our guys and the band and everything else from point A to point B for months at a time. So I didn't really have too much time to dwell on all of it. But then, you know, 10 years later or more, I'm seeing Glenn Campbell's documentary and I went, oh my God, that's exactly what I was going through.
Yeah.
And the documentary only covered, I don't know, a month or two at the most.
Yeah, that's true.
I put in over 20 years. And I would say at least half of that was reasonably okay and fairly easy, kind of. But the last maybe at least 2 to 3 years was more like what Glenn was going through.
Yeah.
And it was not pleasant at all.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But the audiences loved it.
Yeah.
And that was the point. The audiences didn't seem to care. And it was just harder for the family and even Glenn's family, who happened to be all around him, and they were all on stage with them. They all played instruments and things. It was just as difficult for them to just, you know, get through a show.
Yeah.
But once you did, the audience loved it, and you kind of went, took a deep breath and go, okay, we did another one, only a few more to go.
Grab your board and go sidewalk surfing with me. Don't be afraid to try the newest sport around. Bust your buns down. It's catching on in every city and town. You can do the tricks the surfers do. Just try it. With me. You'll probably wipe out when you first try to shoot the curve. Bust your buns down. Taking gas in a boost takes a lot of nerve. Those hopscotch, pole dance, and pedestrians too. Old bucket, shout kayabunk, and now escape right on through. Why don't you grab your board and go sidewalk surfing with me?
Released in September 1964, Sidewalk Surfin' by Jan and Dean, featuring our guest, Dean Torrence. There's some specific stories that came out that were really interesting to me. One was, you know, at the height of Baby Talk. You talk about, which, by the way, I wasn't familiar with the Laurels version of that. I had to go dig that out. I'm like, wow, okay, that's really interesting. All these years, had never heard it.
That was the whole idea.
Yeah.
In our day, you could find records that were on little small labels that you just knew were not going to get the distribution and get the attention just because they didn't have the company power to have that record get into a playlist anywhere.
Yeah.
And then, or even into a store. So we picked on some of those people that just had those neat little records on those little independent labels.
Which means to say she loves me
in Baby Talk.
Say she loves me.
Dip, dip, dip.
She cannot speak very well. Everybody knows. But to me, she looks real swell. In her baby clothes, I ask her if her mother.
This is Jam and James Riley, and you're tuned to Catching a Wave, where it's summer all year long. We just heard a snippet of the original version of Baby Talk by The Laurels. Now we'll hear Jan and Dean's version in just a moment. Our guest this hour, part one of our interview with Dean Torrence. I tell you, one other thing that was really cool about, you know, thinking of Baby Talk is you hearing it on three different stations, just tuning the channel around. I mean, how mind-blowing is that?
Oh my God. It never happened again.
Yeah.
So that was pretty mind-blowing. But, you know, there weren't that many rock and roll stations in those days. So in L.A., probably Los Angeles would have, or New York might have the most rock stations, but even in L.A., there were only three major rock and roll stations. So it's pretty easy. They're all close on the dial. So, of course, as young people in your car, you're always going from one song to another. If you didn't like it, then you went to the other station. So that was common.
Yeah.
Very common to do anyway. And for it to actually happen on your own record was pretty damn
me. She cannot speak very well. Everybody knows that, but to me she sure looks well in her baby clothes. I ask her if her love is true, and she only goes,
yeah.
That, which means to say she loves me.
Thing that along those same lines that stood out kind of shows some of Jan's creativity, starting K-Jan.
Oh, yeah.
Imaginary record or radio station.
Well, creativity and brain power.
Yeah.
And he was so much smarter than the rest of us in high school that the rest of us were always trying to get our homework done. He'd probably have it done in about 10 or 15 minutes. And then the rest of the time he was plotting and planning a career and thinking about the future. Heck, we were just thinking about finishing our homework and going to bed.
Yeah.
and hoping that summer would soon show up.
Yeah.
So we had more time. He had more time on his hands, so he was always sitting around figuring out all this stuff. And the K-Jan thing was absolutely brilliant.
Oh, yeah.
You can explain it if you want.
What he came up with an imaginary radio station, KJAN, and would write out to the record labels to get product for his radio station, and they would send music. So,
yeah, they wouldn't cross check that to see if it was for real. I mean, he had a letterhead,
yeah,
because he had taken high school printing, so he had a print shop in the days when kids, you know, could have those kinds of things, auto shop and print shop and wood making and all that kind of stuff. He had print shop, so he knew how to print and construct a letterhead and make something look very professional. I think he even printed up the envelopes with the letterhead and the logo of KJAN Radio. It looked very professional. You know, a record company's not going to question that.
And no.
When Jan Berry of KJAN Radio wants programming for his radio station in Bel Air, man, I swear to God, he was getting at least a couple hundred records a day once he hit the whole mailing list of all the record companies he could find addresses for. They were all sending records. Every single day after school, would go up to his house and open up those envelopes and, you know, put them on the turntable and see if they were any good.
Yeah. That's amazing.
And then I even tell you, did you read the part about what we do with the cast-offs? And the
oh, yeah.
We didn't like.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, they made great frisbees.
And you wondered if a groundskeeper somewhere has a good collection from picking up all these.
Yeah, because we'd throw them down usually onto a golf course that was nearby Jan's house. Up in the hills, you're in the hills, so we'd be up in these hills overlooking the golf course. And we were playing 45 golf to see how close you could get the 45 to any one of the holes that was the closest to us.
Oh, man.
One of Brian Wilson's band members just got the book, and he read all about that. And he can't wait to get off the road and come to my house, and then we are going to drive up to that golf course, and he swears he's going to take as long as it takes to go over that whole golf course and in the bushes and see if he can find some of those records. He's been dreaming about this for the last couple of nights. He just can visualize all these just classic rock and roll records in, you know, stuck in some bushes or underneath stuff or partially buried. You know, I don't know.
I had the exact same thought. So I tell you what, we'll.
All you guys are crazy.
I'll meet you there. Oh, man.
All you DJ types.
Oh, yeah.
A little unscrewed.
Yeah, exactly. You and the Beach Boys have had a long relationship. You've done some stuff specifically with Mike. But tell me about the first time you heard Surfin' on the radio.
Well, I mean, other than the fact that it was pretty much exactly like the kind of music we were doing and had already had some success doing, we were kind of blown away by, first of all, I think we took it as a compliment that somebody was copying us. But then the other element of the record was, but they're singing about surfing, and just kind of somewhat barely thinking about it, because we didn't have that much time to think about it. We just heard the record and we thought, you know, your first impression was, who's going to care? You know, who's going to care nationally? Maybe some people locally, and yeah, some of our friends who are surfers are going to care, and maybe the surf community up at Malibu, what, 50 guys, maybe they're going to care. But outside of California, nobody knows what surfing is or what it means or why should they care. People are still reacting to kind of the teen aisle stuff, which is all about, you know, relationships and all that. So I don't know if any of us can be interested about surfing. And it was just a local hit, as we guessed, so we didn't think much about it. But then they did Surfin' Safari, which was their follow-up. And now they were on a bigger label. They were on Capitol. And then that record actually was the first surf record to actually get some play outside of Los Angeles. And that's when our eyes really were opened to the fact that landlocked communities were really going to be very interested in what the crazy Southern California people were doing. So that's when we came aboard, and about that time we met the guys, and we all happened to do a concert together, and then we ended up singing all of our songs together, and we all got along, we all respected one another.
With me, pop, dip, 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 pop, dip, dip. Now the dawn is breaking and we really gotta go, but we'll be back here very soon, that you better know. Yeah, my surfing knots are rising and my board is losing wax, but that won't stop me, baby, cause you know I'm coming back.
Going surfing, pop, dip, 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 surfing, pop, dip, dip, surfing, pop, dip, 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 surfing.
From 1961, that's the Beach Boys and their debut single, Surfin'. Little snippet of that. Our guest this hour is Dean Torrence. We're talking to him about his brand new book, Surf City, the Jan and Dean story. And we're discussing Jan and Dean's relationship with the Beach Boys. Here's Dean Torrence.
From there, it became kind of a really neat team. And we worked together with them, they worked together with us, and before you know it, Brian Wilson's handing us songs that he was tired of and was never going to finish, because he was writing kind of a song every couple of days. And we became the recipients of some of his cast-offs.
Surf City being
even being one of the very first ones.
Yeah.
And to have even a Brian Wilson throwaway song is better than 99.9% of the music that anybody else could possibly write.
Yeah, I mean, to think of that being a throwaway song is it's unreal.
We were very fortunate to be around Brian at that particular time. And Brian was a songwriter. So, of course, a songwriter really enjoys having other artists record their songs. I mean, most songwriters aren't vocalists. Some are and some aren't. But in his case, he could produce and write records, but he still had extra songs. That's when it all went really, really well. Because we were always struggling for songs.
Yeah.
Even that Baby Talk song that you talked about, our managers, Lou Adler and Herb Alpert, were the ones that found that Laurel's recording. We'd never heard it.
Yeah.
Somehow we hadn't gotten it in the mail. I think the label was so small, they probably only could print up 10 or 15 records at a time. And if they got Jan's letter, they just probably didn't have enough records to send them.
Yeah, it was the days before labels could send things digitally to people. So, yeah, that's...
Exactly. And the whole deal is, you got to have the material. Doesn't matter how good you can sing, doesn't matter. And I've told my girls this too. Both my girls are somewhat interested in music. But I've always told them, if you can sing great, you can maybe dabble in writing. But if you don't have the material, it's irrelevant if you can perform, because you need that piece of music or you don't have a career.
Sure.
Two girls for every boy. I've got a 34 wagon and we call it a Woody. Surf City, here we come. You know it's not very cherry, it's a goldie but a goodie. Surf City, here we come. Well, it ain't got a backseat or a rear window, but it still gets me where I wanna go. Yeah, we're going to Surf City because it's 2-1. Yeah, we're going to Surf City and I have some fun. Yeah, we're going to Surf City because it's 2-1. Yeah, we're going to Surf City and I have some fun. Now, two girls for every boy. They say that never all the streets of girls, there's always something going. Surf City, here we come. You know, they're either out surfing or they've got a party growing. Surf City, here we come. Yeah, there's two swinging honey for every guy. And all you gotta do is just wink your eye. And I'm going to Surf City, gonna have some fun. And I'm going to Surf City, cause it's 2-1. You know, we're going to Surf City, gonna have some fun. You know, we're going to Surf City, cause it's 2-1 now. Two girls for every boy. And if my woody breaks down, I'll meet somewhere in the surf room.
It's the sounds of summer, surf, and good time rock and roll. This is Catching a Wave. I'm Jammin' James Riley, helping you feel summer all year long. Our guest this hour is Dean Torrence for part one of our interview. We just heard Jan and Dean with their number one smash hit, Surf City. Happened to be the first surf song to top the charts. We'll get right back to Dean right after this song, but let's hear Dean and the legendary Masked Surfers. This was released in 1973, the tune, Gonna Hustle You, on Catching a Wave.
Papa do rande, rande, do rande. Rande, do rande, rande.
Can't compete with the campus king. Ain't got a letter or my senior ring. A cheerleader with the football dude. When summer comes, gonna hustle you. Ooh-wee-wee.
Legendary Mass Surfers, featuring our guest, Dean Torrance. There's a another story of the Beach Boys. I mean, there are so many stories that are great about the Beach Boys in here. One that really sticks out to me is about Barbara Ann. The fact that you're doing a Jane and Dean session down the hall. And I didn't realize you were only gone for maybe 10, 15 minutes. And in that time period, record one of their biggest hits.
I think it was there for a time, and it was their number one all-time selling single.
That's amazing.
And now it might be one or two, but it's right up there.
Sure.
And it was done in 15 minutes. You should probably try and find the... they just did release the Beach Boys Party LP.
That's right.
And it's got all the outtakes and all the chitter-chatter and all that kind of stuff. And so on this version of the Party album, the original vinyl pressing way back in the mid-60s didn't have, was all three versions of the song being worked on in that 15 minutes. And so we sang Barbara Ann. Maybe the first time we sang Barbara Ann, we got partway through it, decided, the acoustic guitar was out of tune, or we wanted to switch some parts around. I think we changed the key. And then we started again, because meanwhile, I'm looking at my watch going, I have 15 minutes here, so we can't spend too much time on this. I picked out Barbara Ann because it was the simplest song to do in 15 minutes. We didn't have to rehearse it. It didn't really matter what the words were, and everybody knew it. That was the whole idea. So now they've done it once, halfway through, and now we stop, and now there's some discussion going on, and it's kind of fun, but I'm still, I got that time frame going. So then we started again. I'm singing the background. I'm doing the falsetto with the block harmonies, and Brian's singing the lead. So we do it halfway through again, and then they stop, and they're switching parts around, and they're, fiddling with the guitar. And then meanwhile, Brian says, why don't you sing it with me, Dean? And then the other guys, I think it was Mike. Mike goes, he's doing fine over here. We want him over here. And then they start arguing amongst themselves. I don't care. I'm going, whatever you want. I'm looking at my watch. Let's do something. And then somebody else is talking about, well, you're going to have to be the secret singer. And then somebody else is saying, yeah, it should be a contest about the... I'm going, okay, well, let's try it or something. And all of a sudden it starts again. I'm now singing with Brian. I hadn't done it with Brian yet. And now I've moved microphones. I'm over with him. We sing the song all the way through. One. And at the end, I kind of go, and they're still kind of jamming. And we start it again. And then we mess around with it. I'm still looking up the watch. And finally, I say, I have to go. And somebody says on the tag, I say, thank you, Dean, as I walk out the door. I go back to, where Jan is in his studio.
And he had no idea.
No, and I wasn't supposed to sing. He told me, don't sing if you go down there because you'll get us in trouble. Even though we both wanted to be in on that project and we had been invited to be involved in that project, our record company, it's a long story, but our record company didn't want us to participate unless we got a signed contract for them that they would reciprocate and be on one of our projects.
Yeah.
And we said, well, we don't do stuff by contract. It's all verbal and all a handshake. And, of course, the suits didn't want any handshakes. They wanted a written document that was signed. So that's where that went.
Yeah.
But I did it anyway. And he asked me, did you sing? I said, oh, hell no. I just listened.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny.
Okay. And he never mentioned it again.
Okay. Here we go.
Ba, 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 Baran. What? Let me do my favorite song. My favorite song.
Let's do. Don't take that couch, though.
Okay, I'm gonna do a Jan and Dean number now.
Cowtown.
Cowtown. I come from West LA, babe. West LA, down where everybody skateboards and surfers are at the most minimum. A bunch of them. Woody's Nary drive right down the street, and everybody says, hey. There goes a surfer. Swisher. Surfer.
Try.
Yes, go ahead.
It's awful nice to have you at our party, but we don't want you.
Awful nice of you to ask me. since I live here.
Hey,
hey, come on.
Look, Carl, I'm tuning up. Oh. F sharp.
The Atlantics with the tune Gatecrasher from their Point Zero project. Hey, stay tuned for part two with Dean Torrance of Jan and Dean next time around. And if you find yourself surfing the web, catchingawaveradio.com is our website, catchingawaveradio.com. This is Jam and James Riley, and I've got more summery tunes for you next time on the place where it's summer all year long. This is Catching a Wave.